Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. I'm Grant Reher. My guest today is Congressman John Katko. He represents New York's 24th Congressional District, which includes all of Cayuga, Onondaga, and Wayne counties, and the western portion of Oswego County. Congressman Katko has appeared on the program in the past. Congressman Katko, welcome back to the show.
Many times in the past.
Yes, you're a regular. Well, so
that's right.
So, gee, what should we talk about?
We can talk about the weather if you'd like, because I heard it's snowing up there today.
It is snowing. Of course, though, I want to talk to you about the rationale for your upcoming impeachment vote, which you set forward
sure.
in a public statement last week. And first, just let me alert our listeners that we are speaking on Wednesday afternoon during the House debate that is going on prior to the vote, in case something important happens or changes between now and when this airs. And also, thank you again, by the way, for being willing to speak to us during that. And then secondly, in order to set the stage, what I'd like to do is I'd like to read part of the public statement that you issued regarding your upcoming vote, and then I'll ask some questions off of that and some other questions.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So here's the piece of your statement that I wanted to read. After thoroughly studying the arguments for and against impeachment, I have come to the inescapable conclusion that while I believe some of the president's actions were wrong and inappropriate, they do not rise to the level of an impeachable offense. Never in the history of our country have we impeached a president without articulating specific crimes. I firmly believe doing so now would set a dangerous precedent. For these reasons, I will be voting no on the articles of impeachment before the House next week. Okay, so my first question is a simple one. Was this a hard decision for you?
No, listen, anytime you're weighing whether or not to take out a president, yeah, of course it's a hard decision. It's hard because you want to make sure you do your homework. The ultimate conclusion I reached was not a difficult one based on what I reviewed and based on the ultimate charges, the two counts against him. But, yeah, of course it's hard. It's hard because you got to take it serious. And so mm-hmm. in that regard, it was very hard.
So I have a couple questions about the reference that you made to the lack of articulating specific crimes. One could argue back against you there that instead of listing specific criminal actions, the founders were deliberately vague on what specific impeachable offenses would be, and that the broader problem introduced by this president of the abuse of presidential power and the obstruction of Congress are actually more significant charges because they get to the core of American democracy and the checks and balances between the institutions. So I'm just curious, why did you pull out and focus on criminal charges there in your statement?
Well, I mean, I put it this way. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool, hardcore-trained federal prosecutor doing organized crime cases. So what drives me always is what is the charge and what is the evidence to support the charge? And I took it from a very clinical look that way. Hmm. It wasn't dispositive for me that they didn't have criminal charges, but in the total mix of things, it really impacted me greatly. So let's start with the evidence first, though. I analyzed the evidence, and I just didn't think that the evidence, while his comments were problematic, they didn't. I just don't think they rise to the level of taking someone out of office and removing him from office, someone that was duly elected. I viewed what I think the founding fathers viewed the impeachment as a very high bar, not in some kind of amorphous bar or some kind of, you know, you could get more likely to not preponderance the evidence and get him out. No, I think it's a very high bar, and I think it was done so on purpose. And so I looked at the evidence and the nature and quality, and then I looked at the charging itself. And I am also a student of precedent. And from a precedential standpoint, there has never been a president removed on non-criminal conduct. And that's mm-hmm. something that really impacted me as well. So those two things together are what drove me.
And just another question on this point. The House Judiciary Committee report on the articles of impeachment. That report does claim that President Trump committed multiple federal crimes, and specifically bribery and wire fraud are listed, you know, again, as even though, as you point out, the articles don't include them. Does that help or matter in that conversation about that?
I think it makes my case, because if they felt that those charges were strong enough to stand on their own, then they would have charged him. I mean, look at what Bill Clinton faced. He faced 11 different recommended charges of impeachment. They whittled it down to four, including criminal conduct, and he was impeached on his criminal conduct. Same with Andrew Johnson, and that's exactly what they were going to do with Richard Nixon. So I looked from a presidential standpoint, and I said, you know, the fact that they're putting these in as grounds for abuse of power, and I thought to myself, moving forward, if abuse of power is what's going to get someone knocked out, I thought back to President Obama, whom I supported when he shouldn't, and I went against him when I shouldn't. And when he put literally billions of dollars on a pallet in the dead of night and had him flown over to Iran to help seal the Iran nuclear deal, one would say that one could argue that was an abuse of power. If that was an abuse of power was a standard then and now, then my God, you know, what president couldn't get impeached based on articulated facts that they don't like what a president's doing? So I think it's a slippery slope we're going down if we start widening and broadening the breadth and length of the impeachment standards.
I'm Grant.
Maybe I'm a strict constructionist in that regard.
I'm Grant Reher. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations, and I'm speaking with Congressman John Katko, who represents New York's 24th District. So let me broaden the discussion then from here. First of all, it's inevitable, I think, that many are going to see this vote of yours as siding with or supporting the president. So what do you say to those folks?
Well, I mean, I just look at my record. I have, since the moment I stepped into Congress, been committed to bipartisanship and independence. Every term in Congress, I'm rated one of the most, if not the most, bipartisan member of all of Congress. Last term, again, was that. And last term, they also found me to be one of the most effective members in all of Congress or the Senate because of the way I conduct myself, the way I co-sponsor bills with my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. I didn't vote for the president to start with. Mm-hmm. No one can say I'm in lockstep with him. If you look at my voting record this term, I'm continuing my independence, and actually to a much greater extent this time because the Democrats are in power. And so I'm continuing to do exactly what I've always done. And quite frankly, if you want to boil it down to it, I call balls and strikes, and no one's going to influence me. I mean, I've faced death penalty. I've faced death threats. I've had to move my family out of my house several times because of my job as a prosecutor. I don't think anyone would say that I'm pushed around or intimidated by anybody. And I'm just calling balls and strikes. I analyze the evidence, and I made a call.
Okay. And you've obviously thought of this, and I think you intimated this when you were talking about whether this decision was a hard one for you. But this is also obviously going to be the vote that you are going to be most remembered for, I think, and all of your colleagues as well. So can you talk a little bit about what role that fact played in your thinking and your decision-making on this vote?
From an historical perspective, not at all. I mean, yes, it's very, very important, but it didn't take any heightened importance other than anything else. It just took a lot more studying, obviously, because there's a lot more to it. But I did the same approach here as I do for every bill I vote on. And there's a lot of bills I vote on that are very, very controversial for my base, my party, and the Equality Act, for example. This term is an example of that, and I still hold strong. And okay. My feeling is, what is the issue? Is it the right thing to do? If it is, I'm going to do it, and politics be damned.
And I'm curious to know, did you do any kind of polling in your district on this question?
No, because, you know, quite frankly, it's a very fluid thing, and you could poll one day and spend a lot of money on a poll, and then 2 days later, the sentiment could change. I mean, look how much the national polling has changed on this from the beginning of the investigation to the end. No, I haven't done that. And, I mean, again, it's not a political question for me. It's what are the facts, and what are the allegations, and do the facts support the allegations adequately?
And have you been contacted by the Republican Party's campaign apparatus, the National Republican Congressional Committee, about your vote?
No, I'm a vice chair of the NRCC for Patriots, which are the vulnerable members of the Republican Party. I work to help them get reelected, but they, you know, everyone is just basically knows me. Early on, I did something in Congress, and they know from that point forward that yes is yes with me and no is no, and you're not going to change my mind. I had a rather strong encounter with the whip team early on when I first got to Congress, and they were trying to change my mind on something, and they were trying to get in my face. And I just looked at them and said, here's the deal. When I say yes, and when I say no, and you're not going to change my mind, so don't bother me and don't do this again. You're going to get me really upset. So let me do what I got to do for my constituents, my district. And from that point forward, they've never tried to push me around, and they're not going to. They know they can't.
So the NRCC didn't contact you and say, look, if you're not with us on this, you're on your own next fall?
Oh, God, no, no. I think that would be probably borderline illegal to do that. So they can't do that. And I would never let them push me around. Hey, man, I had contracts in my life, and those people didn't intimidate me. I'm not going to have somebody threaten me. I don't have to have this job. And if they want to pull their support for me, well, then God bless them. Well, I'll move on. But I'm going to hold my head high and have my integrity high and say I'm doing what I think is right no matter what.
So I've just got one last question in this particular vein that I have to ask, and then I'll move on to another topic related to the issue. But were you individually contacted by the White House about your vote?
No.
No. Okay.
No.
All right. So your congressional neighbor, Democrat Anthony Brindisi, he originally expressed doubts about impeachment, but in the end he has said he's going to be voting in favor of it. It is really looking like, and again, we're talking on Wednesday afternoon here, but it's certainly looking like this is going to be a party vote event in the end. I am only personally aware of one, and I'm not going to count the member of Congress who has said that he is going to change parties, so I'm not counting that as a vote against party. But there's really only one member that I know of that it said, it was a Democrat, said he was going to vote no on one of the two articles of impeachment. So it really does seem to be a party line vote. Is that what you're hearing?
Not completely, because and I think there's an important point, though, too. I think that you raised here, and I'll talk about it in a minute. First of all, Colin Peterson in Minnesota is almost certainly going to be a no.
Okay.
There's an I think Jared Golden from Maine is going to vote against one of the two articles, but not both.
That's the one I was thinking.
Jeff Van Drew is thinking about changing parties. Hasn't changed parties yet. He's still a Democrat. He's voting no. So there's a handful of Democrats that are going to vote no to one or more of the two counts, one or both of the two counts. And what I think is really important from an historical perspective, this is the first impeachment that has gone along pretty much along party lines.
Mm-hmm.
It's never happened before. And that, to me, is telling of the nature and quality of this evidence here. And I think, you know, in Federalist Paper number 65, Alexander Hamilton warned against if the party in power overexerts its power and uses an impeachment as a political tool, that would be a very bad thing for our country. And quite frankly, I think that's what's happening. And that's why I'm very concerned about non-criminal conduct being alleged, because you're broadening the scope, in my opinion, of what they have used in the past for impeachment. And that's a concern.
Yeah, I want to pursue that point a little bit further in a minute. You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with John Katko, member of Congress from New York's 24th Congressional District. We've been discussing his vote on the impeachment of President Donald Trump. I wanted to come back and talk to you a little bit more about the party line vote aspect of this. And I'm wondering whether, because it does seem to be so much of, with a couple of exceptions there, so much of a party line vote, and you contrasted that with previous impeachments, I wonder whether the public, ultimately the takeaway is going to be that this is kind of a party thing. Do you think that's going to be the ultimate way that a lot of folks, particularly in the middle, are going to see this?
No, I don't know, but I will tell you this much. I think that I wonder out loud, without doing any polling, I wonder out loud how much has moved the needle either way. And I mean, were both sides already dug in before this, and has it really swayed those sides, or is it just hardened both sides more? You know, that's why I wonder about the real efficacy of this impeachment process that they've gone through. It's the first time they ever did an impeachment inquiry at the beginning of an investigation, not at the end. And it's the first time that you have strictly a party line, except for some defectors from the Democratic side that are going to vote against it. So I think that's telling in that it wasn't done with the precision and unanimity that should have been. And I'll remind you, going back a few months ago, or a few weeks ago even, they were using terms repeatedly. First it was quid pro quo, and then it was extortion, and then it was bribery. And those are all crimes. And then in the end, they don't allege any crimes. And they just have this kitchen sink mentality of saying, we're going to use this amorphous term of abuse of power and throw everything in, and then we're going to say contempt of Congress, despite the fact that's not a crime, and number one. And number two, the president is litigating the parameters of executive privilege right as we speak in the courts, including the Supreme Court. And of all people, Ruth Bader Ginsburg stayed the case to hear some of those. So they didn't get the information quick enough. So now that they're going to try and impeach a president because they didn't get the information as fast as they wanted. Mm. Now, obviously, if they turned around and the president violated, a court said, you must turn this over, and he says, screw you, well, that's a different story. Then you got a problem. But we're not there, right? And so, that's a concern I have.
So I have one last question about this, and then I'm going to move on to some other topics, actually. But it goes back to kind of the beginning of our conversation about it, and the sense that I get, not so much from what the Democrats are saying, but what's kind of between the lines, is that in a way, this case for impeachment is really about the totality of President Trump's term. And so the specific instance here is what's being alleged regarding Ukraine and the holding up of the aid. But really what is on the table is all of the things he has said, all of the groups that he has insulted and the inappropriate language and previous issues that have been kind of run up against the edge and have been challenged in different ways. Does that factor into this? I know in the end you have to vote on something specific, but it does seem like, in a sense, this is really the door opening into what is being argued for the Democrats, a rejection of the entire presidency.
Totally. You're absolutely right. 100%. And that's exactly what it is. I've had people come up to me, and I am not kidding you, and more than a few said, you know what, I know the evidence may not be there, but geez, you know, he's such a knucklehead. You got to get rid of him. And I'm like, well, that's not the standard. And I even had two people suggest to me that, look, you're a prosecutor, and if you want to charge somebody, you can always make up a crime and charge him with it. Why can't you just do that here and get the job done and get rid of this guy? He's such a jerk. And I'm like, that's troubling to me. And so I think you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happened, is they just don't like this guy, and they don't like his attitude. They don't like his text. They don't like the fiery rhetoric. They don't like the way he carries and conducts himself. And that is a pretty scary standard to remove someone from office for, because if that were the standard, they would say, if you don't like this guy, get rid of him. And so that's why I keep saying, based on everything I've seen to date, the best thing to do is to let the jury decide this matter next fall and let all the Americans, not just a few people in Congress, decide this guy's fate. And whatever the fate may be, you respect it and you move on.
If you just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guest is Congressman John Katko, and we've been discussing the vote on impeachment. All right, so there actually are other things going on in Congress in addition to impeachment.
There is indeed.
So let me give some good news here. The government won't be shutting down, and there is a large, wide-ranging spending bill that the House passed just recently, and it looks like it will be signed into law. And it was significantly bipartisan. It had supporters and detractors from both parties. You voted to pass this spending bill. So what in there did you most like?
Number one, we kept the lights on, and I made a commitment from before I even got elected that I would never vote to shut down the government. So that means that I'm going to vote for spending bills, even if I'm not thrilled with them, because I think we abdicate our responsibilities when we turn the lights off. And so that's not – I'm never going to do that. And quite frankly, if people are wondering about me barking the president – I voted 8 times against the president during the latest shutdown last year, because he wanted to keep the shutdown, and I kept voting with Democrats to turn the lights back on because I felt so strongly about it. So people can never accuse me of not going against this guy because I do it all the time. Mm. But the nature and quality of the stuff, some of it was very bipartisan, very good stuff that we've been trying to get for a long time. And I'm going to just rattle off the things that I remember. But I'll note at the outset, I am concerned about the level of spending. Mm. But I'm also cognizant of the fact that short-term continuing resolutions cost the government billions of dollars a month, and that money you'll never get back either. Mm. And it's a highly inefficient way for it to go about it. So here goes. I had some of my amendments passed in there. One was two water amendments, one of which dealt with the Lake Ontario shorelines and trying to address the catastrophe that's going on up there. And also an amendment on algae blooms. That was going to be very good. Mm. There's also a lot of other great wins in there, like small in the relative scheme of things, is 501c3s were all of a sudden having to pay tax on their parking lots. Like, so Vera House, for example, is paying $1,000 a year for their parking lot, and churches would have to pay taxes on their parking lots. I got that taken out. And there's a lot of other great things in there that we've been trying to get for a long time, like the medical device tax for Welch Allyn is now permanent, which is fantastic. They can do long-term planning. They were still waiting to see if they're going to have a medical device tax next week when the new year came, and now they know permanently it's all good. We had the Cadillac tax, which was going to really destroy the union's ability and businesses' ability to provide high-end health insurance as an attractiveness to come work there. That's gone, and the health insurance tax. So these things that were really gumming up quality health care are gone, and they're gone for good, and we've been trying to get that from the beginning. So that's really good. And there's so many other things I can think of, off the top of my head, those are just a couple of examples. A lot of good things in there. And it was amazing how, for the first time in this term, it seems like the Democrats came to the table and bent an awful lot. They even provided $1.5 billion or so of funding for the border wall, which is unfathomable. And it led me to the conclusion that maybe they are looking at some numbers themselves, some internal numbers, and maybe that led them to the conclusion that maybe this impeachment thing isn't the greatest thing, so they bracketed around some other things like the USMCA and the spending bill, and so they can say we're getting things done and people are not going to be as upset. So maybe necessity is the mother of invention here, and maybe that's what happened. But regardless, I'm happy we did it. I'm happy we got some wins for my constituents and some stability for the American people.
It's interesting, those things that you ticked off. I think in other times, those would be getting a lot more attention than they are.
God,
I imagine,
yes. Yeah.
I imagine our listeners are hearing about them for the first time now. You mentioned the U.S.
I'll give another example.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want
That's
one more
right.
example. For decades, we have been trying to revamp the H-2A visa program, right? And we did that last Friday, and no one knows about it last week. And the farmers are ecstatic about it. It stabilizes their workforce for the first time in a generation. And we're hoping it gets past the House, I mean, the Senate. But that was another big thing that we've been working on for years, and all of a sudden that slipped through. So, amidst all this nastiness, it seems like a little bipartisanship has broken out. Maybe a trend is starting in the other direction. I'm certainly hoping so.
You mentioned the USMCA. I wanted to ask you about that, too. That's the new North American trade agreement. It's recently passed the House Ways and Means Committee, and it will go, my understanding is, it will go to the full House on Thursday, which is
that's correct.
The day after we're talking now. Again, we're talking Wednesday, and it's expected to be approved there. So, first of all, how will you vote on that?
A definite yes. It's
okay.
It's a huge win for us. And, you got to get past the president's bombast, and you got to take a look at what he said he was going to do and what he's been able to do. And this is a big one. He said NAFTA stunk, and he's going to renegotiate it, and he did. And it's far more favorable for us. And I can go through provisions if you like, but the overarching thing is, and no one can deny this, it's a huge win for the American workers and the American economy. And he's followed that up with a tentative phase one deal with China, which looks like it's really going to open up the agricultural markets. He's on the verge of having a deal with UK and Japan and a lot of other places. So he's doing the trade stuff. We had tax reform. We've had regulatory reform. And a lot of things he said he was going to do, he's doing. And Israel's stabilized again. The Middle East is far more stable. I think that there's a lot of things happening that if you just – it's hard with him because he is very caustic at times. But there are a lot of good things have happened, and it's undeniable. And this trade deal is a very big deal for us.
Mm. We just have about a minute and a half left, but I wanted to give you the opportunity at the end if there are other initiatives that your office has taken in recent months that you think our listeners need to know about.
Yeah, I'm becoming one of the point persons in all of Congress on cybersecurity, and I'm continuing to work on that through my work on the Cybersecurity Subcommittee and Homeland. In fact, I had two big meetings today in the midst of all this chaos around here, and I just left one to come in there and talk to you. And I'm going to continue to do all that, continue on the anti-terrorism front and a lot of advances we've had there. But, you know, I do want to take this time to talk to American, my constituents. And, you know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you like me or you don't like me, that's secondary to what I'm trying to tell you. We are at a dark time in our nation's history, but there's been many dark times in our nation's history where people thought we wouldn't recover from, and we always seem to find a way to do it because that's the American spirit. And I truly believe that we will get past this, and the dust will settle, the sun will come up tomorrow, and people, maybe this is a low point for a while, and maybe we can continue to do some bipartisan stuff like we've done in the last week and a half. And that's why I stay in Congress. That's why I stay in this fight. And that's why I'm willing to put up with all the nonsense I put up with to do this job, because I truly believe that being bipartisan, working with both sides and being friendly with the other side, I'm not the guy on TV blowing horns and going nasty on the other side. That's not productive to me. Mm. And I'm hoping and praying that we can get past this impeachment and move on for the betterment of the country.
That was Congressman John Katko. Congressman Katko, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me, and again, taking the time out of this day to talk with me to do it.
Well, you're more than welcome, and I appreciate the discussion, and I meant what I said, and I'm going to continue to work for everybody, not just the people that vote for me, and that's the way it's always going to be with me.
All right. You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. Associate producers include Sarah Forland and Zane Aga. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit us online at wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations or download the show as a podcast from iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.